Welcome to Creative Disturbance. This is Femmes and Years. My name is Yuna Lee, and I'm talking with Dr. Anne Mayovich in the University of Texas at Dallas. Dr. Mayovich, would you please introduce yourself?
My name is Anne Mayovich, and I'm a professor in mechanical engineering at the University of Texas at Dallas.
Dr. Mayovich, I understand that you are leading HERO Lab, and I like the name HERO. So would you please tell us about your lab and your work?
Sure. So my research is in the field of surgical robotics and also haptic devices for surgical simulation and training. So we're really interested in collaborating with surgeons and also sort of want to be surgeons to help them either do their job better by creating novel robotic systems, or to help them learn surgical skill more effectively and more intuitively. So we have a lot of different projects in the lab, ranging from steerable needles to automated coaching systems that sort of look at the style of your movement and tell you if you're too slow or too jittery or too anxious. Part of the work, we also really are interested in studying what it actually means to be intuitive when you're controlling a robotic system. So we do a lot of research related to studying human interaction with robotic systems, so looking at things like their brain activity, muscle activity, even your skin sweat, because that tells us how anxious you are, and to see how we can use that information to design more natural and intuitive control algorithms.
How interesting, even the skin sweats. I'm sweating now. So then would you tell again that what is the most interesting thing in your work?
So I think if we're just talking about the research, I think the thing that is most interesting to me is to be able to really push the boundaries on what we can do, both in terms of novel robotic systems, but also understanding how to better train human users. And so it's just really kind of exciting to be one of very few people who's actually doing research in this area, and to know that you're really kind of pushing the envelope and doing really impactful work that, you know, someone who might be working at a company, an engineer at some company, they might not actually have the time or other motivation to be able to do what we do. So that's kind of what's exciting about it.
Oh, yeah. And of course, there is a difficulty, isn't it? What kind of difficulty?
So I think probably the most difficult part is having so many different ideas and then only having so much time. So trying to manage between what you can do in the amount of time that you have in a given day and sort of being okay with the pace that you're going at. And I think that's probably the hardest thing is not having enough time in the day.
Oh, so the engineers have the same problem with everybody else.
Yeah.
And I'm also curious about people who work with you. So would you tell us about your people in the lab?
Sure. So right now I have, in terms of PhD students, I have 3 PhD students. 2 of them are women. Nina is one of my students who comes from India, and then Marzi is another student who's from Iran. And both of those girls are doing an amazing job working on their projects. So Nina is working on steerable needles and specifically modeling and predicting adverse events that might occur. So things like the needle buckling in tissue or the needle pushing on tissue. And so she's really interested in trying to figure out control algorithms that we can design to autonomously avoid those kind of adverse events. And Marzia, she's working on our automated coaching project. And that is just a and she's been doing a great job on that, and we actually just recently presented a paper on her work at a conference in Greece, which was a lot of fun to go to. And then I also have another graduate student who's a male student, and he's working on modeling kind of the intuitiveness of human-robot interactions. But then beyond that, we also have usually somewhere between 5 and even 12, 15 undergraduate students who work in the lab, mostly over the summer, also during the semester. So they all have a wide variety of projects. And we even have some high school students. So last summer we had 4 students in the lab, and before that we had 3 students. And my first 2 high school students, they actually wrote a paper. So it was pretty impressive.
Wow.
What a high school student can do in a graduate research lab.
Oh, yes. That's tell me more about that, the high school students. How can they write a paper?
So the project, it was actually a simple system. That particular project, we were trying to study something called vibrotactile cues. So vibrotactile cues are basically vibrations on the skin that you can sort of design sequences of these vibrations to give you illusions of a stroking motion or a pressing motion. And so we were interested in putting a bunch of these vibrotactors, these vibration devices, kind of the same thing you have when your cell phone vibrates, but putting them on the arm. And we were really specifically interested in actually studying what kind of sequences of these cues or these patterns are going to be most intuitive for helping a human user to insert a needle. So we kind of tested three different options. The students built the device. They learned how to sew. They learned how to solder wires together. They learned how to program using an Arduino. So the project was actually really simple. The device was really simple. And I already had some code that they could use for the human subject study. So we basically just did a study, collected a lot of data. They analyzed it and wrote a paper.
Oh, so the high school students can do the human subject study too.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we added them into our protocol, so they were officially approved by UT Dallas to do.
Wow.
Ironic, because we can't actually use minors for our research. So.
But minors can do research.
Yeah.
Great. I think that those high school students would become engineers, perhaps.
Hopefully. Yeah.
So this is curious. Would you tell us how you have become an engineer? Is there any particular moment, person, or episode that made an impact on your career?
So I think in terms of wanting to become an engineer in the first place, I would probably have to attribute it to my dad, who also was an engineer. But when we were growing up, I would always help him in the sort of in the garage and in the basement, kind of doing stuff around the house. And I remember once he even had like a competition between me and my sister that he would give $20 to whoever had the best invention that week. I think my sister won, and I really don't remember what mine was, but I at least won in terms of being the long-term engineer of the family, so he's pretty proud of that. So actually, becoming an engineer, I think there's a lot of stages in becoming an engineer. That's kind of the first stage, is making that decision. But then what I think is maybe a slightly more interesting story, not my personal story, but just in general for all people, what path they take after they decide that, yes, they want to become an engineer. I sort of went into college thinking that I was interested in working on unmanned aerial vehicles, but through a long sequence, turns, twists and turns of events, got really interested in medical devices and medical robotics. And at one point, I had to decide what I was going to do when I finished my degree.
So I think that instead of you are working in the airport, you are ending up working with the people in hospital, in engineering jobs.
Right. And so at some point, I just had to decide that I would much rather sort of have a more meaningful impact on the quality of life, specifically healthcare for people. And I had lots of internships, actually, at medical device companies. But at some point, you realize, you know, if I have a bachelor's degree, or even if I have a master's degree in engineering, there's kind of a limit to what you can do. And I realized I wanted to be, like I said earlier, sort of right on the cutting edge of research and doing things that nobody had even thought of before. So at that point, you sort of have a clear idea in your mind that, you know, yes, I need to go to graduate school and become hopefully, if you can, a faculty member, so you can really kind of drive change at that level.
Oh, yes. And is there any interesting episode or story in your life about being a woman engineer?
So I've never had any issues, actually, with being a woman in engineering. And if anything, I think it's actually a little bit of a benefit, because if you're in a room of, say, 200 people, that are in, say, an engineering conference, mm-hmm. chances are there's probably going to be 10 women.
Yes, I know.
And in that case, you know, it's really easy for people to remember you. And so that actually helps quite a bit with networking, especially if you are good at what you do. So I never really had any issues. The only one singular event that I've ever had as sort of a negative thing was actually came from a really, really old surgeon. He was pretty surprised that that I was a professor. So I look pretty young. he didn't know how old I was. I'm 30. But he thought I was a lot younger, so he kind of made a joke about what my next milestone would be. He said that he thought it would be puberty. And I told him 10 years, so I think I won that battle.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, funny story. Yeah. Oh, speaking of the women engineers, there are many young girls interested in STEM area, but a few of them seem actually take a STEM career. So if you have a chance to talk to a young girl who are interested in engineering but hesitating to get into it, what would you like to tell them?
I think what I would tell them is that engineering is sort of, it's a really great place to start because it teaches you a way to think about problems that you might not necessarily get in other areas. So the whole purpose of engineering is solving problems, and problems are everywhere in life, and I think the way that you're sort of taught to sort of systematically approach problems, come up with a hypothesis, design an experiment to test them, evaluate your results, that sort of systematic process I think is a useful skill that you can apply to a lot of different areas. So that's sort of the practical reason maybe to do a STEM career. But in general, I think it's a little hard because you don't, especially when you're kind of younger, you don't necessarily know what you want to do. But at least I can say from my personal experience, being an engineer has been probably the best decision I've ever made. And I've had a lot of fun doing it, so.
Yeah,
good to take that.
I wish I have an older sister who can give that kind of advice to me when I was in high school. Yes. Oh, and I think that we should talk about a little bit about ethics. I'm involved in the engineering ethics research. So as a professional engineer, what advice would you give to your students about engineering ethics, especially to students who want to join your lab? Yes.
So I take ethics pretty seriously. I think that's something that needs to be taught more. So I have in the past designed several lectures for my freshman students where I really emphasize ethics as an engineer. And it's something that you really want to take seriously. So doctors, when they actually become doctors, they take this thing called the Hippocratic Oath.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have something similar in engineering. Yeah, it's called the Oath of the Engineer. And I actually don't, I'm not wearing it at the moment, but how you take this oath is you actually take an oath and you swear to be a professional engineer, to uphold engineering ethics, and to really understand that as an engineer, you're making huge impact on basically everyone around you. Everything that we have in this world that is not natural, that is not created by nature, was created by an engineer. And there's a lot of responsibility that goes into making sure that everything we build works, it's safe. And so I really do take engineering ethics seriously. And so this oath of the engineer you can take, they give you a ring that you can wear on the pinky finger of your writing hand. And it's sort of a constant reminder to you to be a professional engineer. And then beyond that, in my lab, because we work in the healthcare industry, the healthcare area, even then, our devices are always interacting with humans, either for training or literally doing surgery on a human. And so in that case, it's really important to make sure that you've checked everything, that there are no bugs in your code, that everything works, that everything's, there's backups for everything, everything's redundant. So for my area, it's definitely very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... If I wanted to see the very responsible engineers, and can I see that they are pinky and if there is a ring or not?
Yep, that's how you can tell.
Oh, I learned one thing today. Okay, I think that it may sound stupid, but I'd like to ask this last question. Is there a lot of fun in engineering world?
Yes, there is. So every day for me is fun, not just for, you know, being able to do research that I'm really passionate about, but interacting with my graduate students and kind of watching them grow and kind of learn is really, really rewarding and a lot of fun. Having high schoolers in the lab is definitely a lot of fun. And I also get to teach as a professor, and And that's just always a good time.
Oh, so there are a whole lot of fun, actually, if you want to find. And, oh, that's great. So thank you, Dr. Majewicz, for talking with us today. It's really great. And to learn more about Dr. Anne Majewicz and her Hero Lab, visit the Creative Disturbance site at creativedisturbance.org. Thank you very much.